Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring is like on a Jupiter and Mars. In other words, fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring is like on a Jupiter and Mars. In other words, fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars. And let me see what spring is like on a Jupiter and Mars. In other words,
why is it important to ask good questions? I always ask myself that question. It seems to be that we need to engage in good questioning because definitely it's going to give us a different outlook of everything. In my personal experience, just my personal experience, I have found that a conversation is one thing. Asking questions is a different game plan. And people assume that you have a conversation about a topic and then that is going to be concluding that. And not always is the case, especially in business, right? You need to ask for clarification. You need to ask for reaffirmation of everything that you are agreeing with someone. Because if it's going to be on the open air, maybe it can lead to confusion. But anyway, so asking good questions is always a topic, right? I hear also smart questions. People feel very pleased when you are interacting and then you know what? I mean, this is a good question or this is a very smart question. But what are those questions, by the way? What is a good question? I don't know. Hopefully we are going to be able to discover that together. In the meantime, we are going to be inviting our co-host from Canada. So let's see if Benita is here. Yeah, Benita. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning from Calgary. I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, cannot complain. Life is wonderful. Life is wonderful. How's everything with you? I learned that you were at San Antonio, Texas, at one of the ICBA conference.
Yeah.
It was a
3-day conference. I stayed for two. Mm-hmm. And it was really good. Always a good conference, that one. You need to, great forum for asking questions, right?
I'm assuming that that's the case. And let me start with a question. I mean, why do you think that it was a great conference?
Oh my goodness. The learning. Mm-hmm. They always have great speakers and relevant topics, and most of all the people, but not just like connecting with people, but really building relationships. And one of the ways to build relationships, of course, is to ask questions, right? Get to know people.
Uh-huh. So in those particular conference, I mean, definitely you're going to be meeting people that you never met before.
Mm-hmm.
One way to start a conversation is asking questions, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. What would be a good question to start up a conversation?
Well, it depends on the context, but I mean, if you're walking the booths, mm-hmm. it's great to ask, you know, what their tool or their services, what they do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that's always a great question.
All right.
Yeah.
So how many days were that conference this time?
It was 2 days of conference and then 1 day of workshops. I came home early for before the workshops happened, but I went to a networking event. One of the vendors, shout out to Thompson Routers. They had an event at this little Rhine Prost House, which was a German restaurant on the Riverwalk. And a lot of that was really good conversations, you know, asking people about their personal lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the Riverwalk, I mean, is one of the areas that everyone visits when they go to San Antonio, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I've wanted to do that for a very long time. The whole time I lived in Texas, I think I visited every major city except for San Antonio.
Okay. Okay. Do you like it?
Yeah, it was hot. It was over 90 degrees every day.
Oh my God. That's hot. That's hot and humid as well, right?
It's not as humid as Houston or even Dallas, but it's a little bit more humid than here.
That's for sure. That's for sure. Well, this is Coffee Break Logistics and Supply Chain. I'm Jose Montoya from the United States. I'm Benita Lee from Canada. We are talking about today about why it's important to ask good questions. So, Benita, what do you think that that's the case? Why is it important?
I think it's important because that's how you build the relationship. That's how you show you your knowledge. That's how you show your listening. Mm-hmm. And listening is a huge part of asking questions, right? If you don't listen, you can't ask good ones.
I am probably guilty of that. Listening is not probably something that you are born with, right?
No. Listening is one of those skills you need to practice. Listening is one of those ones you need to practice.
Yeah, and happened to be that in my case is something that I have to keep doing, by the way. Mm-hmm. I have to acknowledge that listening is something that I don't put in practice all the time. But you know what? I mean, that happens. I mean, especially when you're not taking the medicine in the morning. I mean, then not everything is working well, right?
Yeah, gotta have caffeine in the morning. Gotta have caffeine.
There you go. Mm-hmm. You have it here. So let me see if I can improve.
Yeah, exactly. That's how you do it with caffeine.
So in logistics and supply chain, definitely asking good questions is something that takes you long ways, right?
Absolutely.
Logistics, for us that we are being in this particular business and supply chain, I mean, for many years, we tend to believe that, let's say, because the experience, the years that we are being in the industry, we know everything and we know how everything should be rolling, but that's not the case. This is a very complex industry. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, I mean, we see it with different eyes because the year that we spend in, but in reality, it is a very complex, right? And you can miss details that are quite determined in one specific transaction. Now, in everything that we do, And again, I mean, it's only my personal opinion, right? In everything that we do in logistics and supply chain, the good questions, they are going to help us in order to improve in multiple different areas. And one is the problem solving, right?
Right.
Now, interacting with a potential customer, for example. I'm sorry, someone is taking care of the garden. I don't know if you can hear the noise, but
that's what that noise is. It's like a raking.
Yes, yes. Well, it is what it is, right?
Yeah.
It never happened at this time, and some somehow, some way, we get the landscaping people working at this hour. But anyway, so I was saying about, I mean, the problem solving and interacting with the prospects and leads and stuff like that. And it's something that you mentioned earlier, right? I mean, if we pay attention to what they're saying, then basically we're going to be able to start grasping the idea of what are the pain points. Now, with that in mind, I mean, when we hear those pain points, then basically the questioning, in order to confirm and be sure that we are talking about the same topic, then is going to help us to improve and to be able to provide some efficiencies mm-hmm. that probably the company is looking for. Now, but yeah. That has to be in within that conversation. What do you think about that?
Yeah, to your point, asking clarifying questions is really important, because sometimes you can be talking about something, and if you're not asking clarification, then you can be talking about two different things and not realize it.
Right. And you know what, at least something that I realize, I mean, because it's very popular, I mean, I don't know, even when you're in school and very basic training and stuff like that, people always like, I mean, you should be asking questions, right? Or when people are interviewing for a job, I mean, you should have questions. So I have found that, especially on the commercial side, I mean, people ask questions, but with no purpose whatsoever. It's just to fill the space with, oh, you know what I mean? We should be asking questions, and that is going to show that we are engaged, for example.
But right, they, in the conversation.
They ask, I'm not saying silly questions. No, I just said it, right? So they are silly. I found that there's a habit of asking questions, but no purpose. So, and even in many cases, people, when you are meeting someone and they are throwing a lot of questions to you, I found that curious, because what is the purpose? I mean, the first intention, it should be to know about you, right? Not about specifics of business and stuff like that. If I don't know you, then very difficult that I'm going to be able to drill down into a deeper conversation about what you are looking for or what is the thing that you are trying to fix, right?
What a great point. Yeah.
And what it would be those, if we review how to ask questions, I mean, what it would be those three elements that we should be considering every time that we are going to be thinking about questions? The open-end questions, right? The closed-end, whatever. If I'm not mistaken, is the clarification questions, right? So based on that, I mean, that's the basic structure that I see in every time that I hear someone talking about how to formulate questions. I think that it should be more than that. I think that, I mean, that's the reason why, I mean, I don't know, I mean, I'm not an expert in neuroscience, but definitely tonality is something that is important when you are asking questions.
Tonality? Yeah, good one.
I wasn't paying attention to that until I got a friend of mine he wrote a couple of books, and it's about neuroscience, and he was describing the tonality as a different way to communicate. I mean, it can be the same questions, but in the way that you are going to be able to formulate those questions, I mean, the feedback is going to be completely different.
Oh, yes, because questions can make people defensive, right? So right. Your tone really matters.
Yes. And let's say, for example, then when you're going to be asking for clarification because you have a doubt. I mean, if you portray that you are really concerned or confused about the topic, then people, they're going to try to help you out to understand that, right?
right?
Versus being arrogant and saying, I'm not sure if that's true or not. No, that's not the case. I mean, it, one way would be that one. The other way, like, can you help me to understand why is this wrong? And probably get close and stuff like that. I mean, in that way, I mean, probably you are going to find a better and more clear feedback about the question that you have, right? Anyway, it was a note. There's a mutual friend that wrote something about asking questions. Robert Berry, if I'm not mistaken, he got a book, right?
That audit guy, yeah, Robert Berry. I met him in San Antonio just now.
Oh, he was in San Antonio too.
He was. He came on purpose, like from Houston to San Antonio to say hi, and we went for dinner.
Oh, that's fantastic.
It was very nice, yeah.
It is the first time that you met him, or you have met him before?
Yeah, it's the first time I've ever met him. The whole pandemic, I think, like, you know, we kind of started out in the same place, like we didn't really know what we were doing. And then during the pandemic, we saw each other grow and our businesses flourish. His business is, he's that audit guy, and he's a master at asking questions. Part of me thinks we should have had him on the show today.
Yeah, well, I realized about that when, I mean, last night. So of course that it was a little bit too late, but it should have been a good opportunity because he wrote a book about that, right?
That's right. How to ask better questions.
Have you read his book?
I have it. I haven't read the whole thing front to back, but I have gone through it and it's really instructional and helpful.
I bet. I mean, being an auditor, I mean, it should be very, very interesting.
Can you imagine? Yeah. Being an auditor, you really put people on the defense when you ask questions. So
something similar like an attorney, right?
Right.
You know what? I'm going to be dropping the link. In that way, I mean, people can check him in his book as well.
Oh, cool.
That it should be very interesting. Yeah. So I'm going to make a note here, dropping that link.
Perfect. And in it can be applied to any industry, really. Particularly in trade compliance, I do audits sometimes, and I know that I don't do it enough to be better at asking questions. So that's why I have his book as a reference book.
Now, we need to understand that the asking questions, I mean, I'm trying to focus on our particular industry, right? Logistics and supply chain. I mean, it's not to make people uncomfortable. That's for sure. I mean, that's not the whole intention of asking good questions.
I think in supply chain and logistics, people are appreciative of questions because shows you care and that you don't want to make any mistakes and you want to handle it in the best way possible.
Right. And now the other thing about the good questions is because, let's say, for example, that we start saying that logistics and supply chain, I mean, it's something that is very complex. And in many cases, let's say, for example, I am a BCO. I'm dealing with multiple different up and downs, but in reality, I can define exactly what is the problem that I have. And through questioning is when I'm going to be able to peel the onion and oh, you know what I mean? This is the root cause. And that's exactly what we were saying at the beginning, right? Efficiencies and problem solving is, I mean, going through the question is when we are going to be able to discover that when we point specific areas. And that's something that we should be promoting, especially when not everything is perfect. We know that, right? Not everything, every single process is perfect. But when we take the time and we, hopefully we have where it's going to be a consultant or someone in the team that is going to be able to question everything that we are doing, that is going to help us to discover areas of improvement. I know, for example, I mean, a classic question that we have in this particular industry is the inventory, right? Any company that we are planning to provide some solutions in the warehouse and distribution area, we always ask for the inventory. And I seen my colleague talking about the inventory. What is the inventory? How many pallets, for example, you're planning to have in the warehouse? And that is the end of the conversation. When we are talking about inventory, I mean, we need to drill down in many different aspects. What is the rotation of that inventory? I mean, the cycles is something that is important. And there's two different cycles. One is the financial and one is the physical, which is completely serve two different purposes. So I don't want to get into that detail because that is a whole science. But what I'm saying is, those questions about the inventory is not how many things you have. It's more than that. What is the age of the inventory? How are you gonna classify that ABC or many different things goes along with the inventory.
Right. How are you gonna serve your client the best unless you ask the questions?
Right. So again, I mean, going through these conversations with our clients or potential clients, I mean, it's important just to be asking the good questions. You know what? I should start with this, saying this, and I'm probably going to apply that to me in many cases, is we should be planning the questions that we're going to have.
Oh, yes.
With the end in mind, meaning if I'm going to be asking this question, what is the information that I'm looking for that is going to help me to do something or to continue the conversation instead of just throwing questions like nothing, right? I mean, what is the purpose of that question? That would be the first question.
Right. And how do you keep it flowing instead of just yes or no?
Right. Now, we are talking about, one of the good reasons to be in business is the thinking about our customers, right? The customer satisfaction and the customer experience. Now, everyone is talking about that they would like to achieve that, but is everyone asking the right questions in terms of what exactly should be focusing on, what should be asking to those clients? But because let's say if we are talking about customer satisfaction, what is exactly those points that are going to complete that? I mean, are you going to be satisfied as a customer if I'm dealing with, let's say, a coffee company, right? What it would be those things that are critical for me to be satisfied? So as a service provider, where basically I'm going to be doing the distribution for that, I mean, maybe a simple thought it would be, oh, the company is going to give me the product, I'm going to store the product and I'm going to ship it out, and that is going to be probably my obligation. Is that only the things that I should be carrying? Is that enough for the customers to be satisfied with the service? I don't know. Maybe the answer is yes, maybe the answer is no. But in many cases, I mean, we should be carrying what? In the way that the goods are being packed, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
I mean, I would assume that Louis Vuitton spend hundreds of dollars in the packaging material and the bags and the ribbons and papers and all these things. It should be a good reason for that, right?
Excuse me.
Bless you.
Yeah. Louis Vuitton is a really good example of packaging probably makeup brands.
And now for me, I'm going to be 100% satisfied if I'm expecting the goods delivered within 24 hours, and that's the case, then the delivery times are the ones that are important, right? Because the product, it can be pristine, but my expectation is to receive the product, I mean, within 24 hours after I place the order. And
right.
if that's not happening, then the customer satisfaction goes down. So basically what I'm saying is, those are the questions that, I mean, what exactly it means to be a dissatisfaction of the customer, right? So with that in mind, then basically I can work everything to make that happen. But I need to know, I need to ask the questions to my customers. I mean, why you are buying my product and what is the expectation and how you are going to be feeling that 100% satisfied with my service or my product. But if I don't know that, then that's going to be a problem, because you may have a good product, but if you are not meeting the customer expectation, then basically that is going to be a problem for your brand, right? Now, I thinking about questions, asking good questions, by the way, everything related with compliance is, and this is your area, right? How important is that in your, I mean, trade compliance, just to have to ask the right questions? What do you think that it should be very important? I mean,
I think like any industry, it's the most important. Like, you're not going to be a good compliance professional unless you're asking the questions so that you can interpret the rules for your customer or your client's particular business model. Mm-hmm. Right? So if you're asking questions, asking good questions, you're doing your job.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, let me see. Let me think about, I mean, if I'm going to be talking to you and I am your potential client. Oh, you know what? I mean, probably the first question that I have as a potential client, I'm not playing your side, right? Just okay. As a customer. Benita, tell me how you're going to be able to avoid fines.
Okay. You're going to be able to avoid fines by hiring human resources, you know, that handle the compliance, because nobody wants to do compliance. You're in the business, doing the business, operations, finance, whatever. Compliance is like vitamins. Like, mm-hmm. Everybody wants, pain relief medicine like Tylenol when they run into supply chain pain or logistics pain. Mm-hmm. But compliance is vitamins. You have to take them every day on a consistent basis. So
that's a good way to put it. Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm. It's not just, you can't just slap a Band-Aid on it. It never works. If you're being reactive to compliance, you're not a compliant company. You're not going to avoid the fines. You're just going to deal with them as they come up.
What do you think that in multiple different organizations, regardless of the size, I mean, we are not worried about preventing those, I mean, to getting those fines. I mean, why we are waiting until we have a request and then we try to implement something, or we have an inspection and then we said, oh, you know what, I mean, we need to raise the bar and be able to be in compliance. Why we wait until that happens instead of the other way around? Like looking for you and say, hey, Benita, come to my office.
I guess it's the same, you know, like, because we're all humans and it's easier to, like, nobody wants to see the doctor until something goes wrong. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So
why is that? I mean, I struggle with that. I mean, I'm saying that very, very open and honestly, right? Because okay. In many cases, in many aspects of our life, we wait until we're forced to do that instead of doing it because we would like to prevent that.
Being compliant is a very proactive game. So while you're not, you know, getting penalties, while you're not in fine situations, that's when you need to be building your compliance program, building your free trade agreement program, building your export, and know your customer, know your vendor programs. That's when you need to be building all of that. You don't build it when you get caught doing something.
It's going to be a little bit too late, right?
Yeah, and then you'll have to pay for it. Or if you don't pay for it, you'll have to get resources at that time. And the resources you get are going to be very expensive. I mean, that's just how the market works, right?
I mean, I don't know if this is a fair question or not, but in your company, Benita, do you receive a lot of calls from companies looking to prevent something? Or is the other way around?
Yes. Well, it's half and half, I guess. There's companies that are proactive, and I really respect them because, you know, they have me on board before something happens. And then there are companies that are reactive that are like, oh, Benita, we're in a prior disclosure, so we need somebody to handle it right now. Oh, Benita, we have like a whole bunch of duties and penalties and fines and forfeitures that are happening, and we need someone to look at it right now. So
what it would be the mix? 20-80, 50-50, or what it would be the mix?
It used to be probably like 80 reactive and 20 proactive. Wow. But I think now my clients have just learned that they need to be proactive. And so the ones that approach me lately are the proactive type. So now it's more a 50-50.
Wow, that's very significant change.
Yeah, no, it's through education, right? And I guess part of my LinkedIn is just that, is be aware, be educated, and ask questions. It's those people that ask questions like, could my company be at risk according to your article that you just posted, blah, blah, right? Yeah, no, I love answering questions. I don't charge a consulting fee when people just direct message me to ask a question like that. Like, I love those types of questions, so I welcome them.
Okay, wow, that's good to know. And what is the best way, I mean, for people to get in contact with you? Through LinkedIn?
On LinkedIn, of course, yeah. I mean, I use LinkedIn really like my business card and my Rolodex, right?
Okay, so for everyone that is listening or watching, definitely Benita Lee, very easy to find. I mean, she's very popular. She's a LinkedIn rock star. So you can ask questions about, I mean, everything related with regulatory compliance, and you are going to be able to guide them through on what to do.
That's really hard to find.
And you're right. I mean, everything about the compliance is quite important because that's part of the risk mitigation that we should be asking all the time internally.
That's right. In trade compliance, you get dinged, you get penalized if you don't ask questions. So yeah. It's best that you know how to ask questions.
It's pretty obvious, right? But let's say, for example, that I am a BCO, I manufacture XYZ product, and that production is taking place in, let's say, China.
Okay.
It makes sense that I'm going to be asking. I don't have to know what is the political situation in China, what is the political relationship between, let's say, China and the U.S. But I should be asking those questions. I don't have to be an expert on the international, but I can ask those questions, right? Because if something happened in that relationship, if we experience any friction, guess what? My company is going to be affected. fire. Mm-hmm.
And really, you should be asking the questions of your compliance people at the front end of your transactions. So like when you're doing your supply chain mapping, you know, I say that kind of like snidely, because a lot of people don't do supply chain mapping before they start procuring or inking a vendor agreement or an MSA or whatever, right? And they'll just start purchasing from vendors and countries that may not be on the good list. So if you were a company that was importing things from China, I would ask you like what it is, what it's made out of. Does it get assembled there or does it get assembled somewhere else? And if it is made in China, is it from that Xinjiang region that is said to have forced labor? Especially important because at this time, it's not you're presumed to be importing from that area that is sanctioned, and you need to prove otherwise. So your vendor systems need to be so intricate that you can see like two or three links up your supply chain. Like if you didn't directly import it from that area, did the person that had it, that exported it to you, get it from that region in China?
And now we are talking about, I mean, the vendor relationship, right? I mean, how important is to ask questions?
Where did your product come from? Is it made by yourself in your manufacturing plant? Or do you source the item from somewhere else? I mean, if you're not asking those questions, you're guilty in customs eyes.
How about the very basic question? Are you a real company?
Right. Yeah, like you gotta know your vendors, know your customers. We have Sanjay here today, and he's saying it would be, I would be grateful if you could share a view on different forecasting techniques such as Crosstin, Arima, Sarima, and others, where these techniques are used and why in real life scenarios. Also, please share the process of data collection, data cleaning, and other process in demand forecasting. Great question. We're talking about questions today, Sanjay. That sounds really specific. Maybe we'll have a guest on to answer something like that. I myself never heard of these forecasting techniques.
Well, one of those names ring the bell, that's for sure. Now, definitely, this is very specific, right? And the answer is not a short answer.
No.
I'll take the time to reply to that, Sandy. That's for sure.
Okay.
Definitely. I would like to share my thoughts about that.
Awesome.
Great question. And great question is because it's going to take some time for me to answer that. Let me see. I believe I saw another comment, but I don't know, for any given reason, I mean, they're not coming through on my side.
Yeah, I've noticed that about StreamYard lately, is that it'll show some and not all, and then I'll go on to LinkedIn and I'll see more questions. So we're not sure we're getting all your questions.
Yeah, is that LinkedIn or is that StreamYard?
I'm not sure.
I don't know. Sometimes I get
in between, I don't know.
It gets frustrated sometimes because you're right about that. I mean, I have seen that, where I see comments, but I mean, it's after that. I mean, when you are gonna go back to the video, not before that. I mean, like for somebody in the live streaming. Anyway, so thank you, Sanjay, for the question. Definitely, you are gonna hear from me, and hopefully, we are gonna be able to talk more about that. Now, related to what he was asking for, there's very good samples about questions, asking good questions. And I read about multiple different companies, right? As you know, I always try to provide some samples about the topic that we are having a conversation on. There's no company that is not using AI just to ask those questions.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
That's the level of the questioning that we are seeing today. It's not someone that is going to be putting together a survey or someone that is going to be asking those questions one-on-one. They are using advanced technology in order to be able to pose those questions. Multiple different purposes, by the way, but it still is the same process. And the Amazons, the Walmart, the FedEx, the Procter & Gamble, the Teslas, the Mercks, the UPS, the Saras, the IBM, the Coca-Cola, they are asking those questions, not as the only tool, but one of the tools that they are using is advanced technology in order to pose those questions for the problems that they would like to fix or for improvement that they would like to promote. And that's fantastic. And here is what is amazing and something that we have reviewed many, many different times. There's tons of data that many people don't pay attention to it. I mean, we get data from everywhere and tons, and even companies, they have their own data. And by the way, I mean, like Sanjay was probably proposing is that how clean the data is, probably is not in the best way that we should have it. But
right.
There,
do we pay attention? Yeah, it's just data. It's not organized, right?
Right. So be able to clean the data and be able to use the data.
Mm-hmm.
More importantly is to use it. That's for sure. And now, it's amazing. For example, I mean, when I'm reading about Amazon, and many of the questions that they are using is everything related with demand forecasting, which is probably very related to what he was asking for as well. But that's how they determine, I mean, what exactly is the product that they need to have available for the consumers.
Right.
Yes, technology is something that comes easy for them. Why? Because they collect it from everywhere, right?
Right. I've always wanted to be like a subject matter expert that helps those people that are developing AI.
Uh-huh.
Towards refining the customs compliance knowledge base in like ChatGPT or whatever, right? Like their internal systems, the software that they're selling. Because no one really has gotten to the point where they can have AI classify their chemicals or their goods to a close to 100% accuracy rate. The AI is still very general in how it classifies. So I think that's something that humans can do. And I would love to have a job with one of those companies that are in AI, helping them to classify things.
Right. No.
So yeah, I'm as excited about these things as you are.
Yeah, no, definitely technology. I mean, is the use of that technology in that fashion is something that is very appealing. And here is something. I mean, this is from, let me see the date, September 13, 2023, Logistic Management Magazine, right? So basically, it's about Amazon and new supply chain focus offering introduced by Amazon. And here is something that when the first time that I read it, based on what people want, companies provide that, right? I went through this particular article and I found that the offering from Amazon is nothing different for whatever they are doing for quite some time already. So The point that I want to make is that it's funny in the way that we as a consumers, we would like to get something, and then that's what the companies provide to us, whether it is meaningful or not. And there's a couple of examples. I mean, this is something from Amazon, one of the biggest players in this particular industry, and mm-hmm. and the other is Flexport. And let me bring that up in that way I'm going to be able to make my point. If I can, of course. Let me try to share.
Flexport was at the conference I was just at.
I'm sorry, say it again?
Flexport was at the conference that I was just at.
Oh, okay. Okay, so you may hear, then you may know about these. The Flexport Revolution.
Oh, interesting.
So very, very, I like the marketing aspect of this. Like instead of supply chain, they have supply change.
Right.
So basically the new offering that they have is the E2E, right? End-to-end from the, let's say, from the manufacturer side to the final consumer. And they're providing services that they are going to cover every single step of the way from manufacturing to when you receive it at your house or office or whatever the case may be, right?
Yeah, wouldn't it be great? I mean, that would be an ideal world where you didn't have to, like, I feel like as consumers, we kind of all have to, like, expedite our own products. And then as supply chain managers and trade compliance people, you have to kind of, like, hop into the supply chain at any of those points to help out.
Right.
But now, imagine you didn't have to do that.
Now, I have a problem with these because, okay, from the presentation standpoint, yeah, that looks very, very nice.
It looks quick, right? but from a reality, that's not how it works right now.
No. And number one, I mean, yes, people, I mean, this is a very recurring conversation, right? Oh, you know what? I mean, I would like to be able to have a solution from end to end. It's very popular, I mean, to talk in those in that fashion.
Right.
But E2E is not that easy because I can guarantee you, if we are talking about us from the system standpoint, it would be probably easier. From the physical handling of everything, when you are talking about from the manufacturer, we'll be able to do any mode of transportation. Freight forwarders do that today, so there's nothing new there. The whole entire chain, nothing is new here. Nothing. Zero. Because this is what we do in international trade, right? Be able to go to the first mile, be able to bring those goods to an airport or a port, seaport, be able to put it in one of the vessels, be able to receive it in the final destination and then move it to our warehouse and distribution site and then process that as more parcel or whatever the case may be and get that to the end consumer. That's nothing new.
Can you scroll down a little bit so that we can see what the pictures represent? Oh, here we are.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
So the first one is the factory, the second one is right. The transportation mode, the third one is the storage, here is preparation, there's some hands handling this particular product, this is how you're going to replenish that product, I mean, assuming that is by on the stores, these are fulfillment centers, this is parcel transportation, and this is the consumer, where it's going to be final consumer or the retail.
So do they have other charts of like maybe a manufacturing company?
No. Basically, that's what I was disappointed. I mean, because they made a huge event And basically they were promoting like, you know, when Apple, for example, I mean, they do a release of a new product, they have a big show and invite people. Like that. So they did exactly the same thing. I'm not saying that doesn't have any value. What I'm saying is that it's the same thing that we are doing for many years.
Now, right.
What is the new thing about that? Nothing. It's very, very marketed driven rather than a true solution in my opinion.
I have heard that a lot about Flexport. Like, I think the joke was that the CEO of Flexport doesn't even know what a BOL is. At one time I heard that, and then at another time I heard that it's like all smoke and mirrors. They say that it's automated, but really it's people behind computers, the same thing. But you know what? I respect them for growing and scaling, and their marketing is like very different for the industry.
And absolutely, I 100% in agreement with that. I mean, when in this particular in the freight forwarding industry, they are very they're not very popular.
Okay.
I mean, there's two different sides of the story, right? Most of many times people hate people that succeed doing something. Mm-hmm. They succeed doing whatever they are doing,
mm-hmm.
right? So they have many haters for that, unfortunately.
Right, of course.
Now, is everything that they do is probably the best or not? I don't know. I mean, that's not, I've been in this industry and I know excellent companies. And like everything else, there's pros and cons mm-hmm. in things that they do. Many companies, they excel in one particular area, some others in a different area. So flexible.
For me, when it came to brokers, freight or customs brokers of any kind, when I was selecting my own, when I was on the other side of industry and on the, you would call it the BCO side, and I would call it the importer or exporter side, I would choose a brokerage based on the account managers that they sent me. So I would have a Canadian account manager and a US account manager, and okay. I couldn't work with them, or if they couldn't, if they weren't at that level that we needed, we would tell them to switch out to a different account manager. So okay. I think that it's all about the relationship that you build with your account manager, and less to do about the pros and cons of the brokerage in general.
Mm-hmm. I tend to agree to that statement. I mean, last night I was having a conversation with a client of ours about the relationships, and that's exactly is the relationship changed everything, because I can tell that, let's say, just for the conversation, Flexport revolution that they describe, I mean, in this week, I don't know, that is, it won't work for anyone, it won't work for everyone, right?
Right.
Unless that you build a relationship and you are going to be able to use
that's right,
and help Flexport to be better in what they do.
Oh, absolutely. Each client, for as old as time, has been helping their brokers to get better. And that's why you see a lot of collaborations and partnerships between broker and client, because the information and the way that you work on the projects with the owner company are going to drive your IT, your software solution, to be better or worse. And maybe it's for one certain industry only, like oil and gas has very different needs than like jams and shoes, right? Mm-hmm. But imagine if your software solution could handle all of those industries. And so you need clients from every single one of them. And then it's the relationship you build with them and their IT teams that's really going to propel you, I think.
Now, for example, I mean, what I was showing about Amazon earlier, in that process, I mean, which is more or less the same, similar thing. I mean, Amazon and Flexport, I mean, recently announced that they're going to have the E2E, right, solution, the perfect solution.
Oh, wow, that's a big partnership.
Yeah, but yeah, no. What I'm saying is those two companies, they said that they have the E2E. It's not that they are doing
it separately.
Right. So, okay. I mean, Amazon is doing that for quite some time already. I mean, they are probably rebranding everything. And something that they are doing today that they are adding to that end-to-end solution is the auto cross-border, which is, I don't know, that's not an automatic function. The only thing that I can say about, I mean, all these processes for these big companies that they have everything, supposedly they have everything in place in order to provide that service in a very streamlined way. That's not the case. They are going to be excelling in one specific area. They are going to be lagging in some other areas. For example, I mean, if Amazon is going to be going to the cross-border, that is very complex. That is a lot of technical aspects in that area. Especially dealing with the government, which is not easy. The compliance is huge. Therefore, I mean, I don't think that it would be that easy, and they are going to be excelling on that because out of the blue.
I feel like the template for companies that do that is now to have like hundreds of subject matter experts. And that's cost intensive.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Now, something that I coined these, the PaaS, right? The partnership as a service, because I truly believe that the partnership is something that it should be done. We offer that. I mean, we offer the E2E solution as well, but we clarify when we are talking to the customers what we do best, what we excel. Now, can we bring resources and companies and to work together in order to achieve something? Yes, we can. But that's something that is not that we own, right? Explain this, right? The company can provide a U.S. transportation? The answer is yes. Do we have any asset base? No. Do we outsource those services? Yes. But the difference is that we are not putting that for bid to multiple companies or companies that we don't know. We know our partners. Because our partners, we can sit together and try to tackle any particular situation that is, I mean,
I really, really love how, you know, you introduced partnership as a service. I think I'm seeing evidence of it happening all over the place. And like, you'll see that, like my biggest client right now is having me partner with them to host their booth at the World Petroleum Congress next week. And so I feel like I'm executing my first partnership as a service with this client. So I'm very interested to see how this works and to have like a long and fruitful relationship with this client.
When that is going to be taking place, by the way?
September 17th until the 21st.
Wow, that's going to be amazing. So I'm hoping that you're going to be able to share with us, I mean, all that experience.
Yeah, I'm going to be streaming a lot of it on LinkedIn, like the talks and stuff like that. We're going to try something new, and we're going to try like what it's like to stream from a conference so that people can get behind the scenes at, you know, what's going on.
Oh, very interesting. Very interesting. You are moving all over the place. Congratulations.
Yeah, no, things are really coming into clarity. So it's good. Nice.
Good. All right. And so it's incredible, but it's the top of the hour already.
I know. We always have such good talks.
Yeah. No question about it. I mean, thank you, Anita, for sharing with us today. Do you have any final thoughts?
Just follow me, follow Jose for, you know, more of the good stuff we bring you.
Yeah, more about Coffee Break Logistics and Supply Chain. I mean, let's learn together. Because, you know what, I mean, I always said, I mean, we are better together because we win together. That's my slogan that is going to be for life, I guess.
Always.
All right, Benita. Once again, I mean, thank you so much. It's always good to have you here, learning from your insight, and I appreciate your time, that's for sure.
Thank you, Jose.
All right. So until next time, when is that? Next Friday, 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, then be well. And have fun, which is the most important part in life. All right. Ciao, ciao.